The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
I'm Boar.
I'm Tony.
I'm Trench.
Trench and Tony, welcome back. It's been a dog's age since we had the both of you here on the show together.
It's been so long since Tony has been here. I think he still thinks that we're filming because during the theme song, he was flailing around like he was showboating for the audience.
What do you mean there's no camera?
So just know that, you know, Tony's still hamming it up for you even when you can't see him.
Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Oh, Tony. Tony. So,
hi.
You guys represent Nerdy Show's stream team, or half of it.
Absolutely.
And what have you folks been streaming lately on the Nerdy Show Twitch stream?
Well, I have been more absent of late just because of the immense amount of work that I do, both for my professional career and for art on the side, for things like Dungeons and Doritos, album artwork, all that sort of
stuff. Well,
thank
you for that. The fans, thank you for that.
Yeah. I got you guys backs. But we've been playing a lot of the old favorites. We play the Rocket Logues or Rocket League, for those of you not with the fun stuff. A lot of GTA 5. We do a lot of stunt races where Trench... One of my favorite games to play as we play that is to watch where Trench is at the end of a race. Because Trench doesn't often place in first, this friend of mine. And...
Why do you gotta bring this up, Tony?
Because I'm serious. It's one of my favorite things in the world. Because the race ends and it flashes to the last player's camera, and Trench will inevitably have given up on racing and just be driving around the world somewhere. Like, he abandons the actual track and winds up, I don't know, in the middle of nowhere.
He's just doing his own cannonball run.
Yeah, it's
because
bit.
Pretty much inexplicably every time something happens that takes me out of the race. So at that point, it's just like, fuck it.
That something's name is David. Or Steve, hitting you in some way, shape, or form that spins you out and sends you careening to your doom.
Generally Steve, and it's usually completely unprovoked.
You're in a race, and there's no human fatalities. Right? I mean, isn't that the point of a video game? Is eliminating human fatalities in the real... No?
Sure! No. Especially not when you're part of Stream Team. And then, what was it? What did we play? Damn it. A couple weeks ago. That's right. We've been playing Mass Effect. Yep. We have actually been playing the new Mass Effect Andromeda multiplayer.
That's multiplayer?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
It's got a multiplayer component, and the multiplayer is arguably the best part of that game.
Is it?
Well,
we can get into that, right?
Yes, and we can get into that a little bit later on because I know that's one of the topics for discussion today.
Well, is Mass Effect Andromeda's multiplayer similar than to Mass Effect 3's multiplayer?
It's funny you should mention that. Because the team that developed Mass Effect Andromeda is the same team that was responsible
specifically
for Mass Effect 3's multiplayer.
Okay, interesting. Well, we will get into that more than later.
Have you guys figured out the dialogue options to have sex with each other?
There's really not much of a figuring it out because it pretty much just like blatantly puts it up there for you.
Oh, okay, good.
Yes, I blatantly put it up there for Trench to just kind of stare lovingly.
It's blatantly up right now for me.
Hard to miss.
Well, let's see. Recently, this past weekend, there was the March for Science on Earth Day, April 22nd, and that was a fine to-do of scientists all over the world gathering together, or it's just science enthusiasts like myself. About 600 satellite marches happened outside of the primary one happening in Washington, D.C. There were thousands of people as of this recording. We don't have like final numbers in. No idea how big it actually was, but... There was quite the crowd. There was all kinds of folks who came out do special speaking. The one in Orlando here was very well attended because Orlando is an extremely nerdy town and quite the tech incubator and home for a ton of scientific innovation at our local colleges. So it was there was a really impressive roster of speakers, including two very kick-ass astrophysicists. And
kick astrophysicists, if you will.
Yep, that's exactly what they were. There were some great chants, like, what do we want?
Evidence, science.
Evidence-based science, maybe. Okay. One of the two, one or the other. When do we want it?
After peer review.
There you go.
Yeah.
No, it's hilarious. I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it.
Everybody was posting that all over the country.
You guys can't see it, but Boris literally doubled over with laughter now.
I laugh a lot.
He does. This man who loves fun and all things energetic.
And a very important chant was also who runs the world, with the answer being nerds. And damn straight, we're going to take it back. If you missed out on the March for Science, there is coming up this weekend on Saturday, April 29th, the People's Climate March, related to March for Science, but a little bit more specific. So come out for that if you're feeling feisty. Or if you're not feeling feisty, but would like to feel feisty.
If you enjoy holding signs on a picket and will support any natural cause, go for it.
Any natural cause, yes. Like of death?
Generally speaking, old age, heart attack, pun-induced brain aneurysm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Also, if you haven't caught it, if you're not subscribed to all the Nerdy Show shows, we went to Star Wars Celebration recently, and there's a ton of coverage for that. In fact, we've released in the past 3 weeks, 3 episodes of State of the Empire, our Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places.
One of my favorite puns on the network to this day.
Yes, never gets old. I love it.
I think it got old.
I die a little every time I hear that.
I love it. I love saying it every time. I'll keep saying it.
So yours is one
I'm
of the...
I'm glad Trench is here to just hate things with me.
You guys are awful.
Your side of the table... Cat, you and I are going to be the positivity side of the table.
Just wretched over
there. And they're going to be the black side of the yin-yang.
So, and I'm also going to be on a podcast, which I don't know if it will be out by the time this show is out, but if it is, we'll link it. I was on Earth's Mightiest Podcast, specifically their X-Men edition. They have a monthly show where they talk about different facets of Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I was on the X-Men show. We talked about recent X-Men books, which have been...
They're still making X-Men books?
Yeah, I thought they were all dead or something.
Well, they had this big war with the Inhumans, and it was really shitty and convoluted in large part. And now the books are a little bit on the upswing, though it remains to be seen. I like a couple of the new kind of relaunch of X-Men books, but the ones we were talking about specifically were kind of the last gasp of the old guard. Fortunately, there's still some great books in there, like everything happening with X-23 and her new role as the Wolverine has been great. So no complaints there. And we, some good discussions if you love X-Men or if you're curious what X-Men are up to. Check it out.
If you're X-curious, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And that's me. And then you guys, anything else aside from Stream Team? Did you want to tell everybody what you've been up to about?
Absolutely. My wife and I, just last night, in fact, got to go to a film and be exceptionally curmudgeonly. We went and saw...
What?
What?
Yeah, I know. Picture my wife as a curmudgeon. My wife, Stacy, is a wonderful human being and generally has nothing negative to say. But then we went and saw Beauty and the Beast. And both of us enjoyed the movie, but picked it apart. It's a fine film for anybody who hasn't seen it. But if you were on the fence, you can pretty much stick to the one from the 90s. It's a better rendition of the story. Been watching a lot of television, been watching Star and the Forces of Evil, been getting into Samurai Jack, and just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying the new season, which I know we'll get it. That's another talking point.
We're going to be talking about a lot of television we've been watching in this episode. There's a lot of cool things to discuss.
It's going on. It's going good.
Well, let's talk about Samurai Jack. What we can say, obviously, we still don't have Genndy Tartakovsky on the show yet. That's hopefully going to happen soon.
It's so good to have him back, though. It is good. Jack is just so good. The season of Samurai Jack is a longtime fan of all things Genndy Tartakovsky. This season has been mature in all the right ways without losing what made Jack great. Your first episode had a war-torn, just psychologically defeated Jack 50 years in the future, and the enemy he fought used music-based weapons that he would scat to control. And I don't mean that in the excretion kind of way.
I was going to say that, gross.
I mean that in the scat music kind of way. And it makes no sense, babe, but it's beautiful the whole way through.
That's what he sounded like when he talked.
I love it.
Just BTW.
I love this show.
Tony just kind of does that every now and then, so it's a good thing that you pointed that out.
I know, because I mean, really, who could tell? You wouldn't be able to. You wouldn't have no idea.
If it was anybody else on the show, you'd get it. But since it's me, even with my extended absence, I leave that kind of an impression.
So Phil Lamar is obviously back as Jack, but also we have a supporting cast member now who's brand new, Tara Strong, playing a really cool, like ninja sort of character.
Ashy, yeah.
I couldn't remember her name. Thank you very much. And it's been so beautiful. It's been so artfully done. I'm excited for every single episode. Did anybody check out the recent Marvel comic that Genny Tartakovsky wrote and drew?
I had seen that it exists. I thumbed through it. It's a Luke Cage book,
if I recall.
It's
called Cage! Exclamation mark.
And it is fucking gorgeous.
And hilarious. It's wonderful. He goes to he gets kind of sucked into this whole like island kung fu showdown thing, and the guy who's kind of low panning the whole operation is like a Dr. Seuss caricature.
That makes sense.
He's got like those kind of those Grinch chin wrinkles, and dimples and so on. It's fantastic. I believe it's collected now, so I highly recommend Genny Tartakovsky's Cage. And as far as other shows, I think something that's I know we started down a intense discussion about this before we were even rolling. We might as well get into it. The new Bill Nye show, Bill Nye Saves the World, dropped on Netflix. And it's not good.
I am full of complete and utter oblivion because I've not watched any of it.
One of the hardest things is to figure out who this is geared for, like, really?
Is it
because he said that it's not for kids.
Yeah, very first thing he says is like, I'm back on TV and I'm doing a new show. It's not for kids.
And I'm pretty sure that that's only because in like, I think the third or the fourth episode, there's a lot of dick jokes.
Well, and then there's a sexuality episode that could have been for kids, except that they, sexed it up at the end. No nudity, but plenty of
décolletage,
colorful vulgarisms. So let's talk about the show. It's not for kids, which is in and of itself, I actually think, a problem, because I think Bill Nye thrives in an all ages environment, because you can go back and you can on Netflix watch the original Bill Nye the Science Guy, and it's an enjoyable watch no matter how old you are. It's geared at kids, but it's clearly like an all ages show. You can still kind of learn something from it in a way, but this show is it's difficult. It might not be for kids, and that's one way to classify it, but then who is it for? And it appears to be very vaguely geared towards a quote-unquote millennial audience, but doesn't really know what that means or how it's meaning to accomplish really anything. It's called Bill Nye Saves the World, which is putting its intention right up there. But how?
And it's too lofty of a goal for this show.
Yeah, because what it's doing is every episode has a different topic, and all the topics are critically important and would be interesting topics, but he is exclusively preaching to the choir. No one's going to learn anything from this, and if they do, it'll be few and far between because everyone knows this already.
Yeah, that's the thing is, if you already know a lot about the topic going into this, he's not going into at least enough detail that would intrigue you if you already have any sort of knowledge on the topic at all.
So it's a lot of really, like, I only saw the first episode, which is about climate change, and it was a lot of Bill Nye taking the opportunity to get up on his soapbox and, you know, preach, and that's just not his strong point in any sense.
Right, and if you, for example, somebody that doesn't maybe believe in climate change or doesn't know a lot about it, I wouldn't recommend them watch this because it's not a great source of information, even in a watered down format for somebody who doesn't know a lot about what's going on.
It's mostly Bill Nye venting his frustrations with people and the establishment.
And in fact, he has a segment on every episode called Bill Needs a Minute. And it's just him ranting for a short duration of time about something. And it's really problematic because we did a Bill Nye microsode, a listener requested microsode, I think maybe last year. And I like what Bill Nye did, but present day Bill Nye, I really have problems with because obviously climate change is a huge factor. We live in Florida for fuck's sake. So this is a big deal. I'm very concerned. I'm very active in my awareness on that problem and the potential solutions and things we can do to stave off that. But it doesn't matter because he's not his argument under no circumstance that I've ever seen has been directed in such a way that could inform and change someone's mind. He's just telling people who don't accept climate change that they're wrong, not giving them any opportunity to grow as people and realize that they are that, you know, that it is actually a real thing.
And while it's one of those that Bill Nye is very much a public persona, but isn't he a mechanical engineer? Isn't that his field of study?
He's definitely an engineer. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure. Pretty sure.
So, what type. So as much as it would be, you know, he's a public figure and he's kind of just become Bill Nye the science guy, but he's kind of the angry science guy who, while he understands climate change, can't speak to it, say, as accurately as somebody who's studied meteorology.
And that's one of the other issues that I really had with is he's brought in all these correspondents and these other people. Experts. On the show, at least on the first episode, and they don't even know what the fuck they're talking about, or it seems like anyway.
Well, that brings up another interesting problem with the show, and that's just like the overall format of the show, is that he's just kind of standing in front of a live audience. He'll monologue for a while, and then he'll decide to
doing an experiment.
It seems like there's not any or not enough cuts. Like, we see him walking over to take his coat off and change into a lab coat. And I feel like about a third of each episode is him like just awkwardly transitioning and or setting up an experiment slowly.
Bill Nye is shot in wide.
Well, and the audience is there and they cheer along with things that probably shouldn't be cheered. Yeah.
And
they're throwing him a bone, basically, because they feel sorry for
and
him.
And sometimes...
It's that Jeb Bush, please clap.
sometimes it's, like, the laughter is canned. Sometimes it's inserted after the fact, and you can tell.
Yeah.
And it's super awkward. There's also a panel segment. There's, like,
And the panel segment is terrible because he doesn't give enough time for each of the people to talk. And the segment as a whole isn't long enough to have any sort of a meaningful discussion about anything.
Which ties back to, I guess, what you guys were talking about before, where it doesn't know who its audience is. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, are we trying to have this be a serious scientific discussion where we're trying to educate and perhaps provide some different opinions? Clearly not, because otherwise then we would have this stretched out to be the bulk of the show, maybe with some entertaining bits thrown in, because it's still Bill Nye.
Right, things where they send a correspondent out somewhere and have like a pre-recorded thing that they play. That could be more interesting if it was longer and they actually like
or if they
dove into
Bill.
The topics a little bit
some of
more.
Some of them are good and some of them are terrible and poorly edited. There were a couple that were, you know, that at least were a good start to a conversation that would take place then later on the show. But nothing ever goes far enough. No information is really presented. And then ultimately, what's the purpose of presenting the information? Because it has geared itself entirely to have an insular audience that has already made up their mind about these issues and are generally pretty progressive people. So then how are you saving the world if you're just regurgitating, like it's a self-contained environment for people who are already on board to stay on board and be like, yeah, I like you, Bill Nye. I like you, Will Wheaton. I like you, Zach Braff. Where have you been? Okay. And so what? Yeah. So fucking what? So the biggest Bill Nye fan in the entire Nerdy Show Network is without question, Jess. And she has started writing an article, which will be out by the time this episode's out, that you'll read. But I actually have a little bit of her rough draft right here, which I think puts this into perspective because she loves this guy. This is not an article I wanted to write. As I write this, I'm watching the fourth episode of the new Netflix series, Bill Nye Saves the World, and there's only one word to describe my mood: disappointed. I probably don't need to tell you about my love for Bill Nye. If you've listened to anything I've said here on Nerdy Show, you know it runs deep. Bill helped develop my love of science. He showed me that science could be cool and I could be cool for liking it. And it is a major reason I became an engineer. So I was excited for his new show. I really, truly was. But Bill Nye Saves the World is not a reincarnation of the television show that made me fall in love with science. It's an awkward attempt at cashing in on childhood nostalgia. Bill even states that in his first episode. It's a show for you grown-up kids all over the world. The best I can equate this to is the American version of Top Gear. You take a successful, popular show and water it down to the point where it's now a joke of what it used to be. There are three core elements that make the show cringeworthy: a live studio audience, weird celebrity appearances, and a lack of substantive silence.
Yeah, that pretty much, that's everything we just mentioned.
Yeah.
Very succinctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the what I she started messaging me in the middle of the night, and I was like, oh boy, what's going on? And it was, you know, reacting to it. And so I was like, oh shit, is it getting any better? And she's like, a little bit. She said, there's an episode on sexuality, and I was like, well, let me check that out. So I jumped forward. I went straight to the sexuality episode, and it was awful. It was.
I haven't seen that one yet. Did you by chance watch the GMO one?
I did not. Oh, I watched the sexual.
GMO one, there's a bit that felt like it was straight out of Jimmy Kimmel, where they sent somebody to a farmer's market and just asked them how they felt about GMOs. And of course, everybody there was like, I don't like them, but I don't know why, you know, and just sort of, or like, I don't know anything about them. They're bad, you know, and it was just. What was the point of that?
I watched a sexuality episode and an episode about designer babies, which I thought, okay, that's way, like all these other things are like issues that like, you know, GMOs. So people shouldn't have problems with the idea of a genetically modified organism. Any type of plant cultivation is a genetically modified organism. Okay, climate change. We know about that. Okay, going to Mars. We know about that. These are things, but I didn't know what he was going to say about designer babies. So I was like, well, let me try that one. And it's a later one in the chronology of the series. And it was way better than the sex one. In fact, it almost was a good episode. It just didn't go far enough at all, and still had, you know, a relatively useless panel.
Because the show is only about 22, 23 minutes long, an episode.
Netflix, it had to accommodate for commercials.
I felt like it could have been an hour long, or it should have been like an hour long episode on each of these topics, right, at minimum.
And if they needed to fit into this small amount of time for some reason, they could have cut out a lot of, like I said earlier, the experimentation setups and him changing his jacket and walking around slowly and miscellaneous pointless banter.
I mean, and kind of a point of comparison to this in a way, and I say this having not seen the show, but no, but just based on what you guys are saying, we all remember the remake of Cosmos, or the reimagining of Cosmos.
Cosmos is Space Time Odyssey.
Yeah. That was, in many ways, kind of the same thing. We took something that was really popular a long time ago with a very prominent figure within the scientific community who helped explore and explain elements of science, elements that are going around. And this was everything we've been asking for, everything that you guys have been saying this show should be. It should be an hour long. It could delve deeper into one particular topic, which it did every single time. There were different segments that happened where either Neil deGrasse Tyson was direct the camera, and then you had the animated segments. And it feels like every misstep that Bill Nye took was something that this new Cosmos series did in the right direction.
I can't recommend Cosmos to Space Time Odyssey enough. I loved it. It started a little weak because it was establishing kind of like a base. Because it actually was meant to educate. It was the first episode.
Yeah.
So it would build a foundation that you could then take that information as you watch the rest of it and build off of that. Mm-hmm. So it starts a little slow. But once it gets going, like, and you know the language already, you know the metaphors already, it's fantastic. So, I mean, the sexuality thing, by the way, I just got to say, you know, no one, there's no need to identify, you know, everybody's respective sexual or gender backgrounds in any circumstance, but it did seem plainly apparent that, with one exception, everybody there was heterosexual, and that seems problematic for a number of reasons.
I don't understand. I mean, we have you know, various panels on women's body rights all the time, manned entirely by men. So if that's okay, then clearly this should be okay too.
And they start off by talking about one of the first things they start off talking about is being intersex, but they never say the word intersex, nor do they explain what that means. Because obviously the issue of gender is a sociological issue, because it's something that we've created as a species. We've made up gender and what all that means. And our gender roles are in large part designed by what we've invented as humans. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't belong in a science show. But there's plenty of science that pertains to gender and sexuality, like all the different in-betweens, like being born with some version of both sex organs, or those women who, I can't remember the name of the, I don't know if it's a syndrome or whatever it is, but the women who were athletes who were like kicked out of like Olympic tryouts because they were found to be biologically male, and they did not know that they were. Mm-hmm. These are real things, fascinating things that were in no way addressed at all in this show. They skip around on it all and then play up the fact that Bill Nye is talking about sex to address that, you know, polyamorous lifestyles and bisexuality and all kinds of fun sex stuff is A-okay, which it very much is. However, that is scientifically irrelevant. All you need to do is assert the message that everybody should, like, not care what anybody else is doing and love each other and get along. But instead, they had an animated segment that on its own would have been great with a bunch of different flavors of ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Like coexisting, and Vanilla was trying to do ice cream conversion therapy and make everybody else Vanilla, and then Mint Chocolate Chip came in and it's like, hey, I'm two things, and then seduced Vanilla and it's like, hey, didn't you want to try a Neapolitan? And then they all went to this like club, which was a big ice cream bowl, and jumped all over each other, which would have been great by itself, but not in a constructive conversation about the science of gender and sexuality, and especially not when they spent time on that instead of having a more meaningful conversation, and especially not when they ended the episode with Rachel Bloom doing an extremely vulgar and not kind of funny, but not good enough rap about, like, hey, like, let's everybody just fuck, basically. There's all kinds of different ways you can do it, and saying vulgar things, and I mean, and I love vulgarity. Everybody knows that I have a filthy brain and a filthy mouth, and I love all kinds of sex stuff. That's one of my favorite things to talk about. But in the context of this Bill Nye show, it can't. I mean, I suppose vulgarity is the wrong word, but basically, raunchy sex stuff,
mm-hmm.
And just for the sake of having a woman on the show rapping about raunchy sex stuff. But it meant nothing. It offered nothing. Everyone was already in agreement who's watching the show, based on the nature of the show, that it's okay to do whatever with whomever so long as everybody's consenting.
It's not educating. It's not informing. It was
so try hard. So
a
weird.
A lot of that rant that you just had there about the Bill Nye show reminds me a lot of my problems with the new Louis C.K. comedy special, but we'll not delve
into that.
It's just terrible, and I wanted to say that real quick.
Sorry, Louis. You're starting to be a fish. You're aging.
It's just a goddamn shame, and I think one of the most frustrating things is that it represents so much wasted potential, because I could see a version of the show so easily that would be great, because they got it right 20 years ago for children. So why not now?
Here's an idea for Netflix. Give us the money. We'll do something way better.
And it will contain, and this will take a lot of restraint from me, but it will contain no explicit material.
Yeah,
that I want that money just to see that happen.
As I was watching it this earlier today, I was just disappointment and feeling like we could have done this better. Like the correspondents they had on the show were just like, who the fuck are you? I don't care. Give me more Bill.
People would say, who the fuck are these guys? We don't care, but at least we would have had something better to say.
We would have been a better, you know, better presenter than what they were.
And, you know, I'm sure they were probably up against a lot of adversity. Maybe the reason that they can't have a formatted show the same as the old one is that Disney owns the rights to it, and if Bill Nye does it, there'll be a problem. I don't know that, but that's possible.
Yeah, but at there's the same so time, many other ways that they could handle, like, yeah. that problem.
I'm going to tag back to something that was brought up in Jess's comparison to the American version of Top Gear. Because, as we all know, the core cast of Top Gear, the British version, has now done the grand tour with Amazon. So, and the restrictions between what the BBC owns in terms of the rights to that format, those segments that they used to do.
That's the perfect example right there of having, like, your format kind of
stripped from you.
Yeah, entirely. Taken from you and held hostage, and they own the rights to everything you used to do.
Maybe Jess's comparison had more levels than we knew.
It did. It really did.
But to that point, the Grand Tour, because it still has these core three, well, it's not the same, say, punch as Top Gear. I've watched the entire season of the Grand Tour.
I don't know. I like Grand Tour better than Top Gear, the original.
And you're fine to do so, because it's still funny. It's funny as hell. There's a lot of good stuff. I do kind of miss the celebrity interview segments, because
that's what I like about it, that those are gone.
and they took them out in an amazing way with more star power than they've ever had doing ridiculous things.
I've only seen one of them, true. But it's Simon Pegg walking on a bridge and then he falls into the river.
The first one is they have fucking Hawkeye. Why am I forgetting his name?
Jeremy Renner?
They have Jeremy Renner in the first episode, and it's like, okay, we're in the middle of the desert. We're going to have Jeremy Renner. He's going to jump. He's going to skydive out of a plane, land, come into an interview, and he jumps out, and you just see
his
somebody.
His parachute doesn't open.
Hits the ground. It's like, ooh, So I guess we're going to have Army Hammer. I suppose he's dead.
That's the most perfect way to handle celebrity interviews to
and
me.
Then they had Army Hammer come out, and Army Hammer got attacked by a poisonous snake.
And it was so well done. It was so well shot. I mean, Top Gear's always been really well shot. And I want to say, fuck Jeremy Clarkson. He's a piece of shit. He's a shitty human being, and fuck that guy. But Top Gear's a great show in spite of him.
He's a wonderful presenter.
I would also say because of him, because, I mean, he's a great person to have on a show.
He's a wonderful personality and a terrible person. He's a wonderful personality and a terrible person.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's
let's move on. That's our cantankerous corner. Let's find out if we're going to continue to be cantankerous.
We're not cantankerous people. We
are very passionate.
That's just Tony's word of the day.
Well,
I think we need to just, like, you know, Pee-wee style and just scream whenever he says it.
Did we love something? Can we talk about something we love right now? Has that happened?
I'm going to ask this question very, very tentatively, because I saw, Bor, you wanted to talk about the new season of MST3K?
Sure. Have you seen any of it?
I have seen, I'm watching the first episode. I'm still in the process of watching the first episode.
Oh, man. You haven't even finished one?
Dude, we've mentioned my work schedule is hideous.
Okay, whatever. Yeah.
But
anyway, what do you got to say about it?
I like it. I dig it.
I like it a lot.
Awesome! We did it! Yay!
I mean, it is truly, and this is something that...
Fuck you!
It's truly something...
There's Trench again being...
Cantankerous. But especially because I do listen to Nerdist, and Jonah Ray's a big part of that franchise, so I've heard a lot of, like, his build up into it, and I've been very interested to see where this show goes. And it seems real. I love the fact that they have stuck to the very lo-fi feel of the original series, despite the fact that I guarantee you they had a bigger budget than that. And it's funny. It's fucking funny.
Do you mean lo-fi in that the props are kind of...
Yes, the props are shitty as hell.
Well, I mean, they're intentionally shitty.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They stuck to that aesthetic. They could have done better. Whereas before it was by necessity, now it is by design.
Now, I haven't seen the show yet, but I was at the San Diego Comic-Con panel where they elaborated on the set design, the complicated folding sets and all that with the title sequence. That, at the very least, was extremely complicated. They showed the process for that.
I was going to say, like, even though it looks crappy, it's, like, intentional, and it seems like it would have taken a lot of work to do some of that.
The complexity behind all the things they were outlining to me, I saw the blueprints. It was nightmarish.
And it's great. It is great.
I'm glad. If I wasn't watching these shitty Bill Nye episodes, I was going to watch that. It was either or.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a better use of your time, probably.
But now we had a conversation now. We would have just said we liked him.
Tom Servo can fly now.
Okay.
But only in the theater.
Okay.
So I've never seen any of the original or any of the new, so I've got nothing for you. Other than I'm really not interested in it, just because I'm kind of... burnt out on Patton Oswalt and Felicia Day.
Why are you burnt out on that?
They're just everywhere. I mean,
not though.
They're talented. They're for
not
whatever,
too many places.
I keep running them into shit.
I can't get enough of them. So I'm kind of like, where are you getting so much of them?
And I am going to point out that they're not in the show much.
They show almost up at not at all. They're like there for the intro. And then a little bit in the middle, and maybe some
VO.
They are not the stars of the show. They're just accessories.
Yeah,
they're maybe like 10%.
Dan likes to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they like to keep bringing. Like, I keep catching all the episodes when he's watching them with Patton Oswalt's like character that's 50 different clones or whatever.
He is mostly poorly handled in that show. I gotta say,
I haven't seen that show ever. So
Patton Oswalt's great, and he's a gem. We need to save Patton Oswalt.
Yeah,
forever. He took his Emmy to Arby's, and it was beautiful.
But basically, in summation, if you like the old MST3K,
this is a faithful recreation of everything you know and love about it.
Yeah, it's great.
There's some fascinating material in here. I wanted to look at what films they were watching. I don't know any of them.
Reptilicus.
Which is exactly how it should be.
Reptilicus is pretty good.
There's some from the late 80s, which I'm very intrigued by. But there's also some guest stars that I didn't know about. For example, Jerry Seinfeld and Mark Hamill.
I didn't see that. No,
I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited. So, I can't wait. Cannot wait. Gonna be great.
I've only watched like three so far. So
So if we want to go back into the things that we're kind of problematic with, Trench and I can talk about Mass Effect.
Please do. We haven't mentioned Mass Effect Andromeda since it came out. That seems like an oversight.
Trench, you have played a lot more of Mass Effect Andromeda than I have. And I guess broad strokes, we can both speak to the fact that all the rumors are true. The game looks wonky as fuck. It is, and Haven't they patched this? They've started to patch this, but it's when a ship is sinking from a like giant hole in the hull, a little patch isn't going to fix the water that's already inside. And it's difficult to say because Mass Effect.
There are parts of it where this set piece is beautiful, but the character models, the way they're interacting with this set piece is fucking terrible.
And it's hard to pin down exactly why. There's a wonderful video on YouTube by the channel Extra Frames that we can link to on this episode's page that goes into some of the things that might be and how to create an animation system for a game like this, where so many conversations are optional, where there's a lot of different kind of conversations that can be had, different directions it can take, and what that means in terms of a hardware perspective to create this sort of conversational tree, this tree system. But I think a lot of it boils down to the fact that it's a C team. All the main Trench, you've brought this up before. The main guys are no longer part of BioWare that kind of spearheaded the original Mass Effect series and made it the magical trilogy that it was.
Well, not even just them, but like the leadership at the company is gone. So there's nobody there to say to anybody at EA anymore, hey, we need more time to do this, and have that actually like mean something and be taken into consideration. Now it's just EA says something and they got to do it. And I think really it probably played a big chunk of what happened with this, where they just said, you guys have had time, we've given you money, now we want our game.
It's also the potential, because they're in a new engine. The original games were done in Unreal. This is done in Frostbite, which is EA's in-house engine used in all the Battlefield games. And there's the possibility that they might have had them start using Frostbite. Yeah,
like halfway through or something.
Halfway through, which is a complete redevelopment of assets and programming to make everything work.
I hope EA learns from this, because this is how many times are we going to hear this narrative? How many times is this going to happen?
Well, that's the thing, is I was watching an episode of Jimquisition earlier this week, and he was talking about how one of the presidents or CEOs of EA in the past said that, like, hey, we have this track record of picking up studios and then ruining them, and we need to learn from that. And I think that was like a 2 or 3 year old episode. He might have still been with Destructoid when he did that. And yeah, no, they haven't learned anything.
They are still destroying studios left and right. And it's unfortunate, because this, much like the Bill Nye series, much like my feelings on Beauty and the Beast and a lot of films that I've seen recently, is just this idea of potential. The series has a lot. This game has a lot
of
potential.
People work hard on this.
There's a lot of lives into this. There's a lot of good stuff in it. The change in narrative from being the last savior of humanity to, against an overwhelming threat, a soldier with a military background, to just somebody who is... He's a recon specialist, and
I mean, he's still a soldier with a military background, but the setting is different.
Yeah, it's not. Oh, you're the best soldier that there ever was. You're cream of the crop, rise to the top. Never eat a pig because a pig is a cop.
Now he's dropping rhymes poorly.
It's tricky, Cap.
Oh, you're right.
It's tricky to rock a rhyme that's right on time. But you're not that. You're this. It's a sense of exploration versus defense. You're not exploring a galaxy to find people to save. You're exploring a galaxy to ensure the survival of an entire species, of an entire populace. And that, it tags back to older styles of, I guess, navigation, narration. And it's a cool storytelling element. There's characters that are genuinely unique.
Yeah, I like that they took different directions with all the different characters that are on your crew and what you saw from the characters before. They almost did a little bit over the top, because literally everybody is like a different thing. They made sure that everybody...
It's too extreme?
Almost, yeah. Everybody is like an outcast or a weirdo or whatever from their particular, from the norm that they've shown for this particular group or race or whatever in the past.
So what kind of Asari do you get then?
kind of like a runaway kind of thing. She's like, she's not a traditional scientist, but she's kind of like learned stuff on the street or something, I guess.
She's an Indiana Jones.
Is there a Quarian?
No, the Quarians didn't make it, actually.
Well, who knows, yeah. Right?
It's, at least they haven't made it yet.
Because they don't know how to address what happened in the Milky Way galaxy, because if you haven't heard already, you're not in the Milky Way galaxy anymore in this game.
You're in the Andromeda galaxy.
Yeah.
And it is
in the name.
It is 600 years.
Yeah, 600 years later.
It is 600 years after the events of Mass Effect 2.
Basically, during the events of Mass Effect 2, while you're running around as Shepard, defeating the Collectors and preventing the imminent return of the Reapers, the Andromeda Initiative is gearing up to leave the Milky Way galaxy. And the reason you never hear about them in the original trilogy is because basically it's kind of like, they're soon to be like crackpots and, idealists and dreamers, and it's never going to amount to anything, and it's just going to be a colossal failure and a money pit. But during the course of the second game is when the Andromeda Initiative leaves
like
the
Milky Way Galaxy. Christopher, rape you and kill you, Columbus.
Something like that.
Less the rape and killing. You are a good guy. And I mean, there is good stuff to this game. The multiplayer
history
that we
played. Written by the victors, Tony.
As somebody who has experienced it, we're generally pretty good guys. There's a nice little scene at the beginning of the game where you're supposed to not shoot first, and that results in a lot of your people getting shot. So you're
is there like new races in this new galaxy?
There's two.
Okay.
One of them is a villain.
Be fair, like you're only okay. So in the first Mass Effect game, or the first trilogy, you had the entire Milky Way galaxy because there was a network of Mass Effect relays that could take you everywhere in the galaxy. So you would go from the galaxy map down to like a cluster map, and then you would pick a solar system, and then you'd go to that solar system, and then you'd pick a planet in that solar system to go to.
Sure.
So in Andromeda, you don't have the full galaxy map. You only have the cluster map. So you're picking individual solar systems out of this one cluster. So you have a much like condensed area of the galaxy compared to the original.
I guess game. That would maybe explain why there isn't as many races.
So yeah, mm-hmm. That's you've
got the races and then two new ones. So
are those floating pink blobs that go on about the Enkindlers?
The Hanar are not there.
Yeah. Oh.
Missed opportunity, guys.
Yeah.
The Hanar, the Drell, which was the race that Thane was in the second game, and the Quarians were all supposed to come on a second wave of initiative ships that didn't make it because the Reapers came back in the third game.
Spoiler alert.
There's also, like I was starting to say, there's stuff to like about this game. The multiplayer is a lot of fun, which makes sense. It was the multiplayer team that went in to develop this. And it plays well by and large. In terms of the action in the game itself, it plays well. It's just...
The combat is definitely the best part of the game.
There's so much in between it that, like, it has not grabbed me. And Mass Effect would always traditionally hook me and drag me along for a 40-hour ride. This hasn't. I've played maybe 4 or 5 hours of it. Half of that's been multiplayer.
Now that I know that you're into being hooked and dragged, I'm, just...
Some people
pay extra
for that.
You might be in for a surprise now.
They call me the Super Bass.
Weird. Okay.
Boom, ba-doom, boom, boom, ba-doom, boom, baby. It's a Nicki Minaj song, I'm sorry. I don't know why my brain's on hip-hop these days.
Yep.
I would have never made that connection.
Didn't follow.
Super. Well,
you don't strike me as a Nicki Minaj kind of guy, Tony.
Yeah, well, I'm full of surprises.
So, Mass Effect Andromeda. So you would say, is it worth playing and looking the other way when people's faces implode?
Give it, 6 months for them to patch the rest of the bullshit out of it?
I guess. I mean, I want to like and enjoy the game, but it just tries so hard to fight me on that.
It is a $30, $60 game.
Pretty much, yeah.
So once it hits $30, absolutely. Pick it up. Enjoy it.
When I first got it, because I picked it up like the day before it actually came out, I thought, that everybody, like the people that were EA did a thing where if you pre-ordered the game and signed up for their subscription service, whatever, you would get 10 hours of the game early. And So I thought that, you know, okay, everybody's got, you know, just naturally because of the state of the game industry now, there's always a day one patch. So people mm-hmm. are playing an unoptimized version of this game and they're bitching about it. So,
and we've kind of moved to this very vitriolic culture where it's a lot cooler to hate on something new than it is to try and support it. And the truth of the matter probably lies somewhere in the middle.
So, you know,
I'm in the camp that's like, you know, you need to finish your games a little bit before they come out, instead of
that's the rest of us.
I mean, day one patch.
Yeah, I hate that too, and I'm, it really irks me that that's the way the game things industry are. Works now. And that, you know, instead of getting like an expansion pack to a game like we used to get, now we get bite-sized DLC that's not anywhere as near as like large or as immersive or expansive upon the original property as like, you know, what actual expansion packs were. And yeah, so I made it 30 hours into the game and I thought, you know, okay, you know, this game is actually running a lot better. I'm not really seeing anything. And then that's when stuff started breaking. I'd be in the middle of a dialogue and the party member that was following me that was supposed to be like pitching into this conversation would start talking. But because their character model was like way behind me, they didn't render properly in this scene. And so they're talking, but they're really muted because they're really far away.
They use positional dialogue. So yeah. If you're not close to the person speaking, you can't hear what they're saying.
Positional audio, right?
Yeah, positional audio.
Positional dialogue, I guess, also makes sense because you have to be next to somebody to talk to them.
Yes. But positional audio is what I meant to say.
Okay, gotcha. I just wanted to clarify.
I went to talk to one of my crew members when I was on the ship, and it triggered a dialogue that was supposed to take place in a different part of the ship. So it
broke. So you could hear somebody yelling?
No, it like, broke way the game the as the game tried to warp me through the ship to this other room that I'm supposed to be in for this conversation.
Oh, okay. And how many hundreds of dollars of DLC can you buy for this game?
So far, I think the DLC plan is a couple of free ones, if I'm not mistaken.
I haven't seen anything about it. I know because I got the pre-order, what was it?
He got the Ultra Deluxe Super Edition.
No, I didn't get that one.
No, we both got the like, we spent too much money on the game regardless.
It was like 10 extra bucks for the early, where the, like, I don't know if they call it the Deluxe Edition, because that's the other thing, is like they call it fucking 50 different goddamn names now. You have the Deluxe Edition and the Super Ultra Deluxe Edition and the Super Ultra Mega Collector's Edition. And
personally, I was waiting for the Andromeda Deluxe Edition that came with the actual galaxy.
Yeah, and that one actually comes with an in-game hat, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Several of them.
Oh, good.
Several of them.
And a sweater.
I was being totally sarcastic, but apparently it's true.
And a live, no, there's also a live Hanar that they send you.
Oh, good, because I want a live Hanar, whatever the hell that is.
It's the ones that are always talking about the Enkindling.
Oh, right, yeah, the pink blob people. Why didn't you just say that?
Because I thought that this conversation actually like had a history, and you would remember back to like 2 minutes ago.
You're expecting way too much.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because I'm over here on the positive side of the table, and I don't believe in the entropy that is the two of you.
Well, entropy is always going to win in the end. Mm-hmm. That's all we have to say.
You son of bitches.
All right. Free Comic Book Day is coming up, May 6th.
Yes, it is.
And Free Comic Book Day is kind of dumb because it actually fucks over comic stores. They pay money for these free comic books, and then people who don't read comic books come in and buy them, and the amount of people who actually
buy them for free.
Well, yeah, come in and get them. The people who that actually translates into people who are going to spend money at those struggling comic book stores, few and far between. But they're expected to have free comic books, and if they don't have free comic books, then they're going to get a lot of heat from people who want to come in there getting free comic books. However, that said, on Free Comic Book Day, sometimes some cool stuff happens and some really neat books get released.
And sometimes things, you know, almost happen that aren't, like Marvel Comics wanting everybody to let Hydra take over their stores.
What are you referring to?
For the Captain America thing?
What about it?
You haven't heard about this? So Marvel wanted everybody to do a promotional event for, I can't remember the name of the
event. Secret Empire.
Yeah, yeah. The Captain America story where Captain America is working for Hydra now.
Yeah, which I plan on. I'm going to talk about that, actually. We'll talk about that.
They wanted everybody to like put Hydra decals all over like their stores and wear Hydra shirts and just kind of like, oh, Hydra took over our store, so it's okay that, you know, Captain America is working for Hydra because everybody's bent out of shape over it. And, oh God, it was glorious how just everybody turned on Marvel so quick and was just like,
why did they? That actually sounds like a good promotion.
Because everybody is, well, Hydra is Nazis, or they've got too much in common with Nazis, and so, you know, it's just too close for comfort for some people.
Well, here's the thing.
Bleeding Cool has an article about it.
I'm sure they do. I will share the coolest thing about Free Comic Book Day after this. Let's take on Secret Empire right now. Secret Empire, there's a lot of misnomers about Secret Empire. That's the story that's been building for a while now. We've talked about it in past episodes of Nerdy Show, where Captain America was altered by the Red Skull to be an agent of Hydra. And how and why and where that happened is kind of complicated, but actually interesting. And hey, it's comic books, so of course it's kind of complicated. Now, this story arc was started before the election, so this is all playing out a lot worse. It's a lot grimmer than anybody would really want to deal with right now in their lives. A little too close to home. But the thing about Hydra is Hydra are not Nazis. Hydra became Nazis when the Red Skull appropriated Hydra. Before, they were a secret society, a secret paramilitary organization, but not aligned with the fascism and the hatred and the eugenics projects and all the other shit that the Nazis did. No, Hydra was not responsible for the Holocaust. Hydra are not a great organization because they represent, you know, subjugation, but they're like a militarized Freemason. If that makes sense. You know, they've got their cult that's been around for an extremely long time. That's their bag. So Red Skull did an
part of why people have trouble like acknowledging and accepting that is just because for Aaron was posting about it on Facebook and I was reading his comments.
Aaron from A Comic Shop, our beloved sponsor, yes.
Yeah, and it's Hydra has kind of a convoluted history with Marvel Comics and writers and people like putting all of that together. So it's really hard for people to identify that that is what their background is.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is totally understandable. I really do get why there's a misunderstanding about all that. And, ultimately what actually happens, which is fascinating, is that Captain America, he was changed intrinsically in such a way so that he believes his background was different, his reality was different, but he was always aligned with Hydra, and Hydra itself became appropriated by the Nazis while he was already indoctrinated with Hydra, believing in Hydra, and then has the opportunity to pretend to be the Red Skull's lapdog and defeat the Red Skull and take back Hydra because he, Captain America, really Captain Hydra. I don't think they call him that, but like, you know, let's for the purpose of simplicity, he's Captain Hydra. But he's as good a strategist as Captain America ever was, and he believes in Hydra, not Nazism, not Red Skull. So he structures all this out, overthrows Red Skull, takes back Hydra, and then launches Secret Empire. Then launches the takedown of global governments to the subjugation of Hydra and all that, and, you know, reveals his evil plans to his friends and so on. I've read Secret Empire Zero, and it's a neat comic story. I know this is not going to last. It's comic books. What lasts? So many characters come back from the dead. You know, this Captain America will be returned to his status quo eventually, you know, somehow living with the baggage of this having happened to him, making him a stronger character for it, but ultimately getting back to some kind of status quo, most likely. And it's been a great story. I've been following it since it started, and I've really enjoyed it throughout. Nick Spencer's been doing a great job, and there is a Free Comic Book Day issue for Secret Empire, and I don't know if the things happening in it will be depicted in other ways in stories that people will pay money for eventually, that maybe won't be as scarce as the Free Comic Book Day issues because they're free, therefore they go fast. But a thing happens on the last page of this Free Comic Book Day story, and it is insane. It is a crazy moment in comics, and I think people are going to remember it for a long time because it's just one of those things. I won't spoil it at all, but you can say, so this happened one time. People are like, damn, really? Because those are the best comic stories. The thing where you can tell somebody your compressed version of like Civil War, and people be like, wow, that's crazy. Of course, now there's been a movie, so less crazy. But maybe you tell them the comics version of, oh, a reality show superhero team accidentally exploded in elementary school. People be like, holy shit, why wasn't that the thing that happened in the movie? Fuck Sokovia.
That's kind of what the movie did.
But here's the book I really want to talk about with Free Comic Book Day. Star Trek The Next Generation, Mirror Broken. This is the mirror universe for Star Trek The Next Generation, previously unseen. We got some Deep Space Nine mirror universe. You know, we got some original Star Trek mirror universe. But we've never seen this, and the cover says it all. It is a buff, bearded Picard in a sleeveless Federation uniform. Sitting in his seat like a pirate with a Borg data over his shoulder and an even sexier than normal Deanna Troi.
I do like that they kept with the convention of evil mirror universe facial hair.
Not for everybody, but for Picard, it was important.
And Deanna Troi would have made a little bit less sense.
Yeah, I kind of thumbed through that one that you had, and it looked really amazing. Like, I didn't have a chance to really read it because I didn't have time, but Borg data and
action. And sleeveless Borg data also.
And there was like Action Barkley in there.
Barkley's the main character. Okay. Like that's important to know. The whipping boy of the Enterprise other than Wesley.
That was my next question, is Wesley Crusher present? Yes, no.
There's a lot of characters that are not present in this Free Comic Book Day preview. This is a story that is only going to be available on Free Comic Book Day, and then issue one will begin. Presumably when it's collected, this will be right in the beginning of it. Tasha Yar's in this issue. She's also sleeveless and gut punches Barkley just for fun, just like, ha, gotcha. Punch you in the gut. This is where you'll see her. And then say it's Tasha Yar. That's all I'm going to say. It's Tasha Yar. So
I was satisfied with how they handled their character.
So there's other characters that we don't see yet. We don't see Dr. Crusher. We don't see Wesley. We don't see Geordi. We don't see Riker and Worf. Well, based on the continuity, because this is original continuity, the Klingons are off in their own scene. We might not see Worf at all. Don't know. And what's great about this is it plays by, you know, the Star Trek rules of how this really works. These are not just evil versions of the characters. This is not their characters inverted. These are people who are evil because of the nature of the reality they live in.
What about Mirror Universe Q?
Wouldn't that be a hoot? I don't know. I would love to see this. I
don't know if have they ever addressed that even in comic books.
Isn't Q a multidimensional being? So if there's another universe,
I don't know if
they'll just be Q.
I think he's still limited to his own universe.
I don't know.
As far as I'm aware,
it's a fair question.
I bet you he probably could transition to another universe, but I would argue that there's probably another. Like there probably is a mirror Q.
Well, it's just Q deciding to be the mirror Q for that day.
It's Discord from My Little Pony. That is Mirror Q.
Well, 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 Memory Beta. What do we got here? In the Mirror Universe, the Q was the dread deity of the Orion Cabal, a cult of the Orion race who worshipped him with crime, chaos, and blood sacrifice. The assassins of Q killed in his name.
But does it say anything? I mean, because the race of Q is, I mean, he is an alien. He's not a god. They're very godlike,
but they're not gods,
right? So I just think that they're in each universe that there would be a Q continuum.
Yeah, I don't know.
A Q continuum.
I don't know. I don't know. But
no, it's called the Q continuum.
Yeah, they should have called it the Q continuum,
but they didn't. So shut up.
Q continuum.
So
you're just feeding the entropy.
If you're gonna buzz your local comic store on May 6th, be sure.
But it doesn't say anything out there if there's multiple Q continuums.
Well, I closed the window. But mostly because I couldn't figure out.
Now I've really got to know though.
I couldn't figure out what the hell this website was referencing. Like what? Where are they getting this information from? So I was like, you know what? That's interesting. But
Friday Night Fanfiction.
Let me move on. Well, I mean, I'm familiar with Memory Alpha. I don't know what Memory Beta is. That could have been a Star Trek wiki filled with lies. I don't know. I have no idea. And Bor, I can tell you're looking it up on your own phone. Okay.
I might be.
Proceed.
So, okay. Random weird comic book that came across my desk because Dan kind of threw it at me. Did you read the Booster Gold Flintstones thing?
Oh, I sure did.
That was really fucking weird. But the part that I found the most interesting was actually the section at the back that was the Jetsons.
Yes.
Which was a very interesting take on the Jetsons.
Which is the prelude, much like this Free Comic Book Day Star Trek comic, to the full-blown series that's going to be.
It starts out with, it's Judy is the daughter.
Yep.
And George's mother in a, you know, kind of a clinic or some kind of building.
Hospice maybe?
Yeah, something like that. And they're talking kind of like grandma's dying kind of a thing, or choosing to end her life. And that, then you realize that grandma is, you know, at a place that's like they're going about assisted suicide, basically, because she's 124 years old and has seen the devastation of the planet and people like fleeing to space and then coming back to Earth and living above like the oceans that are all that's left now. And then they show up and grandma's Rosie.
Yeah, that's the
who in the what in the fuck now?
Yeah, that's the surprise at the end of the short Flintstones or short Jetsons comic, leading into the status quo of the forthcoming Jetsons series, written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, is that Rosie is the consciousness of George Jetson's mother inside of a robot body. Taking her life back, being like, you know, young and virile again. I don't know if she's going to be a maid, but she's living with him. What does that mean?
It means I just stroked out a little bit.
Why?
Because that is the way that the Flintstones have been handled, and now the Jetsons seem to be the strongest Hanna-Barbera tie-ins that they've been doing.
Well, just you wait, because Mark Russell, who writes Flintstones, Flintstones is ending, and he's moving on to Snagglepuss.
I heard about that.
Scooby-Doo is staying dead and buried, right?
I don't know what's happening with Scooby Apocalypse, but I know that no one likes it.
I wonder why nobody likes it.
Because it was done better already and it was called Buffy.
But the Snagglepuss book is great. It takes place in the 1950s during the Red Scare, you know, like Washington tribunals about Hollywood and so on. And Snagglepuss is a gay playwright trying to make it in New York.
Wow.
It's kind of phenomenal. Everybody.
They've already released a preview of it, and it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I cannot wait.
Huh.
this Hanna-Barbera shit at DC is so goddamn good, most of it. It makes no sense. One more shout out. Find this at your local comic book store when you're there on Free Comic Book Day picking up the Star Trek issue. There was a one shot that's a Suicide Squad Banana Splits crossover written by Tony Bedard.
What?
It's fucking great. Now, I don't even know who the banana splits are. There's some, like, such
one banana, two banana, three banana, four.
There's such a fringe piece of Hanna-Barbera, I don't even know them. And
one banana, two banana, three banana, four.
Let me explain to everybody what just happened here. Tony said that. You heard him say that. And then Boar tried to help him, be like, hey, can you say it more into the mic, you know, for the future?
Oh.
And Tony,
I took it again.
He did another take. But this is a relatively live show, Tony. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I'm trying. Listen, that was me slipping on a banana peel. Wacky. The show used to air on Cartoon Network.
I didn't have cable growing up.
Ah, it was great. It was these weird segments.
Explains so much.
It was these weird segments where they were like, the banana splits were in costume.
Yeah, it was kind of live a weird action. Live action thing.
What? What?
Yeah, weird live action thing with the banana splits, and it would cut to cartoons.
But they're like animals. They're cartoon animals.
Wasn't it like really old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
This was back before Cartoon Network was like having programming. Showing like the fucking Shirt Tales and Space Ghost.
Yeah, I'm transitioning way to something we've talked about already, but it's one of the strongest things, like Samurai Jack, is just the difference between now, like what you can do on television and what you couldn't do back when Samurai Jack initially aired. And especially now where Adult Swim is more of a thing too. Mm-hmm.
And the Banana Splits were this fascinating group of, they were almost like the Monkees, because they were a band.
They're a bubblegum pop group, yeah.
They're a bubblegum pop group, and they would, quote-unquote, play their instruments as these people in full fucking fursuits. Like giant, like Disney bulky theme.
Ones, too.
They were Disney costumes, almost. The same sort of stuff you see Mickey and Minnie and Donald walking around Disney World. That was the Banana Splits.
Weird.
Yeah, I only have really vague memories of that, and all I remember is how big and weird looking their suits were.
That's basically where I'm at too. Yeah.
In this, they're actual talking animals in a world full of humans who are trying to make it as a bubblegum pop group. And because they're talking animals and calamities happen, they get arrested. They get sent to Belle Reve, and Amanda Waller sends them out on a mission to retrieve the Suicide Squad because they're disposable. And they're kind of like the Gorillas. It's great. It's a great one shot, and it comes packaged with that Snagglepuss short. So
that just make my brain hurt.
Comics, everybody. That's the shit.
It's like you're staring at some kind of non-Euclidean shape. we got a shout out. We got a new patron. We are entirely listener supported, and we rely on you to keep us and the entire Nerdy Show network alive. That means you should go to patreon.com/nerdyshow, pick a tier. Even a dollar is a-okay by us. We'll still give you a shout out, and there's tons and tons of perks available at a multitude of levels, many different ways to join in and have fun with us. So shout out to Seth Lipton, new patron here at Nerdy Show.
How you doing, Seth? You got some delicious teas. I like what you do.
He is such a tease. And if you shop on Amazon, you should use our links to do so. Because if you do, you will give back to Nerdy Show. The entire Nerdy Show network will be in part funded by you buying the stuff you were already going to buy on Amazon. It's amazing. Nerdyshow.com/Amazon. Super easy. Do it. I know a lot of other networks ask you to do it. If you're not doing that for those other networks already, well, one, you should switch to Nerdy Show. But for two, if you're not doing it, just do it. Change your Amazon links to our Amazon links. That easy.
Yeah, all you have to do is one time just change your bookmark over. You're done. You don't even have to think about it anymore. You click on Amazon, you're helping us out.
Cerebral Paladin, he shops on Amazon for us a lot and likes to tell us about the things he's getting. He says, for years, my Radon R9 has served me well, but the challenges of the Andromeda Galaxy, the Wildlands, and the upcoming battles with the Rebel Alliance and the fall of the Last City have forced me to take up the NVIDIA 1080 Sword, an expensive endeavor, but one that will see benefits to the Nerdy Show Network. Shout out to the Stream Team and Lightning Dogs.
Also Stream Team. Yeah.
You guys need to come up with a thing you do.
Fuck you, Trench.
Oh, you want to fuck Trench?
No, that's...
We talked about that earlier.
Yeah, that's on the record, Cap.
Yeah, that scene in the video, Tony Baldini deep in the trenches.
I thought I'd destroyed every copy.
Well, it's a rare collector's item. And if you purchase it on eBay, you'll help fund Nerdy Show.
Because it is an Amazon subsidiary. Going now for the whopping price of 5 cents.
Why you got to make work for me? Because now I have to make sure that, you know, there's no proof that any of this has ever happened or existed.
High bidder, Trench.
I have to hide all of your bodies now.
Go to deepinthetrenches.xxx.
The downside is you can no longer use the leaves in my backyard. They have already been burned.
Luckily for me, I forgot what we were even talking about.
Hooray. One last thing. Shop with Nerdy Show. We have all kinds of stuff. You should be wearing shirts that have our logo on it because you like us. Why, that's a thing people do. Why aren't you doing it?
In fact, one of our shirts just celebrated its 7th anniversary of inception.
Oh,
the
no
Peekathor
kidding.
Shirt.
Toot your own horn more, Tony.
I'm sorry. I did the fucking artwork, Trench. I'm on the show. I get to sit there and say that Peekathor was drawn 7 years ago.
God damn. We have a shirt that has only been a shirt very recently, but 7 years ago, Tony drew it. And it's Pikachu and Thor as one entity, Pika-Thor. It's a great shirt. Why not buy it? Why not?
It's stylish. You're stylish. I see
so
some synergy happening.
Nerdyshow.com/store. We also have stickers. We got Nerdy Show stickers, Dungeons and Doritos stickers, a ton of Ghostbusters role-playing merchandise, Dungeons and Doritos shirts, products that you could be enriching your life with that you're probably not enriching your life with presently, and that's a damn shame. So consider it. Please do consider it.
But a shame that can be rectified. So yeah.
Yeah, let's rectify that right now. God together.
Damn it. That was the thing that happened.
It was a thing. We did it.
It came from behind.
Well, if you can't afford to give us any money for right now, for whatever reason, other things you can do include liking, commenting, and sharing our posts on Facebook and retweeting us on Twitter. Because that helps us with those social network algorithms and get our stuff out there for people to see and experience.
Not to mention on the old iTunes, you can give us a rate and a review.
You can also review us on Facebook.
You can do all sorts of those types of review things. But if you just want to do one review and just copy paste it through all of it, you can do that too.
That's good advice.
We're not going to judge. But any kind of star rating, any kind of review helps boost our notoriety on iTunes. And since you like Trench and I so much, head on over to twitch.com/nerdyshow to subscribe to the Stream Team and all of our happenings and chicanery.
Chicanery, huh?
Cantankerous. Woo! I have the power.
I'm sure it would get annoying, but we should definitely do Words of the Day more often.
Every time Tony shows up, that way it's only going to be once or twice a year, and it'll stay fresh, like Tupperware.
But it takes about half of the episode for us to figure out what your Word of the Day is.
which is why it's also going to stay fresh. Stay with me here, Boar. Yes, and?
Stay no. fresh.
No.
We're also on SoundCloud, too. That's where you can find our episodes.
That's true. We're in lots of places. We're really anywhere that you get podcasts from. And if we're not where you get podcasts from, that's a huge problem. Tell us and we'll submit the necessary things. Whatever outlet that is, I'd say highly question their integrity, because if they're not already carrying us, there's a problem there. And the problem is them.
We'll redirect you to where, you know, a proper channel for our podcast is.
We got some events coming up that you can expect to see me at least, if not some of our other hosts. I'm going to be at MoogFest. I'm going to be at HeroesCon, and I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con. MoogFest is in late May. HeroesCon is in mid-June, and San Diego Comic-Con is in early July.
Good times will be had by all in Cap's presence.
I can verify that.
It'll be the cap of your experience.
I will show you a lovely time. We will hang out, and do not hesitate.
Cap will say inappropriate things as Galdap, so look forward to that.
Oh, boy.
What's the upcharge on that, Cap?
That is at a premium right now, and that is at least a $10 lunch.
Or a Dorito.
That was a great Derpy Show reference there.
You're welcome.
Trench, as I understand it, there is a Justice League animated series on television right now that I'm not watching.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me about this, and I should have looked at it more, because we talked about this very briefly on the car ride home earlier this week on my way back from office time.
You put it in the notes, pal. I'm just following
you.
You
put
lead.
It in the notes. I put an addendum on there saying that I've seen like four episodes of
That's
this
enough.
Thing.
That's enough. I've seen two episodes of Bill Nye. Still had feelings.
It is, what's it called? Justice League Action. And it happened at some point after the, you know, debacle that was the ending of season two of Young Justice on whoever the fuck's hands that was.
Cartoon Network.
Mainly, yeah. And it is, my takeaway of it is that Young Justice coming back needs more John Constantine.
Yeah, because what you told me, they killed Young Justice, so obviously this Justice League show is a little bit younger ages than Young Justice was, but it has John Constantine in it.
And it has, yeah, some storylines that are kind of
like a young Constantine?
No.
Oh.
Well, actually, in the episode that he appears in, because I thought he was more of a recurring like main cast member, but the show is actually like it will follow different members of the Justice League in episodes. Like one of the other episodes follows Swamp Thing mostly. This one followed Batman, Zatanna, John Constantine, and Dr. Fate. And it starts out where they're kids trick-or-treating, and they think that they're just kids wearing the superhero costumes out trick-or-treating. But then it turns out that they're actually the superheroes that are under some kind of spell from Clarion, and he's trying to lock them in this like haunted house to just, you know, lock them away forever.
Like you do.
The other one was a Solomon Grundy and Swamp Thing story. Batman appears, but Batman gets zombified by Solomon Grundy really quick, right off the bat. And then Solomon Grundy is actually like intelligent and, you know, has his own designs, where he's taking this magical gem and marching into the city of New Orleans and zombifying the entire populace. And Swamp Thing is done by Mark Hamill, who's also in another episode as the Joker.
Yeah, I've seen enough of this to know that this is kind of a return to the DC animated universe a little bit in terms of its voice cast, because Kevin Conroy's back as Batman. You've got Tim Daly back as Superman when he shows up. And I think it's even because Matt Ryan's been playing Constantine since the TV show. And I think he's even back to play the character again, because he's voiced him wherever he has the chance.
And he's not smoking a cigarette. But I do see a picture of him holding a flask, and when he's been turned into a child, as Matt mentioned,
he had a lollipop in his mouth like a cigarette.
I just like Constantine on a younger geared DC children's show. I love it. That's amazing. It seems like a fantastic show. I can't wait to check it out. Good stuff's happening in television, folks.
It just is. Even with all the bad shit that we have yelled about, there is so much good stuff. The second season of The Get Down is on Netflix, and I know that's a big deal for you, Kevin.
Silicon Valley is coming back this week.
And Silicon Valley is just, it's Mike Judge on it is, true Mike Judge
it
form.
Is one of the best TV shows on right now.
What was that show you were talking about earlier this
Silicon
week?
Silicon Valley.
No. Trial and Error, is that the...
Oh, Trial and Error. Yeah, that one's a funny one if you've got Hulu. I think it's also on NBC. But the season just finished up, and if you like laughing, Trial and Error is a really good show to watch on Hulu. It's got John Lithgow in it, and he's fantastic. Enough. That's all I needed to know to start watching it. I was like, John Lithgow's in this. I'm watching it.
And for anime fans out there, you've got the second season of My Hero Academia that's on and around various places now. So watch that, enjoy it, and I'm sure listen to Wicked Anime, because I guarantee you they're talking about that.
Well, hey, while we're giving shout-outs to television shows we like, regardless of how nerdy they are, I've got one of my favorite shows ever is, right now, is Schitt's Creek. And I've never mentioned it because it's not particularly nerdy, but I love this show. You should totally check it out. It stars Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara from so many Christopher Guest films.
Oh, but God. It's not even funny, but it is funny.
It is. It's very funny. And, Boar, you hate Christopher Guest films.
I hate him with a passion.
Fortunately, this is all of those actors... Like,
but they actually have a real script instead of just told to improv things and then they cut things together that are terrible?
Yes. I mean, and I like Christopher Guest, but this is actually like a much more structured show that still uses the improvisational skills that, you know, those people have. I mean,
it's Eugene Levy's show, isn't it?
It is. He and his son Daniel created together. Daniel's also on the show. It's about a very well-off family who have everything stripped away from them, and the only thing they have left to their name is a small town called Schitt's Creek, which Eugene Levy's character, Johnny Rose, bought as a joke. And so... So they live out of a motel, and the mayor of Schitt's Creek, Roland Schitt, is Chris Elliott.
Naturally, that's his name.
Yeah, of course it is. And
well, if you promise Christopher Guest doesn't have anything to do with it, I might check it out.
He has nothing to do with it.
Okay,
it's a great show. The guy who plays the inept assassin in Dirk Gently plays a veterinarian in the show. He's a constant character in it.
The inept assassin?
Yeah, the military guy who keeps killing people.
Oh, okay. See, when you say assassin, I went straight to Bart.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
The holistic assassin, as opposed to the military.
Well, she's good at her job.
Yeah, but he's just also more of a military operative, I think of him as. He's not really an assassin. He had a gun.
Well, he was...
He tried to shoot somebody with it, but I don't know if I would qualify him as an assassin.
It would have been an assassination. Of a kind. Sure.
Yeah, but that's anyway, it's that the guy. Same way okay. that it's the same way that somebody can like be a salesman, but I don't know where I'm going with this analogy. Abort!
I believe it may be my favorite situational comedy on television since Community. It's extremely good, and every season it goes from like okay, and season 3, which just finished recently.
All right, I'll try that. You incredible. Watch Trial and Error because you'll love it.
Cool, it's a deal.
French, you and I will just keep watching the same shit because they're talking this way, we'll talk this way.
You know, so random interesting thing that I saw pop up. I don't know much about it at all. Apparently, Carmen Sandiego is coming back as a cartoon.
Yes, it is.
But you're never gonna see her. So
nope.
Is that true? You're never going to see her?
Well, because
she's
going to
be on a streaming service, but they're going to hide what title she's going to be in, and you're going to have to search for it. So
just watch all of the Netflix shows.
There's
going to
be a little sprinkling of clues in some of the other shows, but they're not going to tell you which show to watch.
See the tail end of her red trench coat flash by the corner of the store as she walks past.
Everybody was invited to her wedding to Where's Waldo, and nobody could find out where it was. Everybody got a different address.
And on that note,
we got to wrap this up. Let's end this. Taking us out, we have a recent track from Megaran. This is from a project he did called Notorious R.A.N., a tribute record to Notorious B.I.G. And this is 10 Game Commandments.
Yo, Eric, I got to shout you out, man, because I wasn't even going to do this one until you said something. But you was like, yo, I got to flip it, you know, flip mode.
One, two, three. Four, five, six, seven, eight.
I've been playing games for years, yo. They made me an animal. Gamers need tips since they stopped making manuals. Step-by-step pamphlets for you to get your game on track so you won't be whack. Rule numero uno, yo. If shooters are your bag, don't camp out in high spots. Don't capture the flag. Nothing wrong with taking advantage if you can manage, but there's a thin line between technique and spamming. Number two, if you're getting beat, you gotta take it. No unplugging, real gamers don't rage quit. Number three, know your role if you're part of a team. Heal is heal, shoot is kill, you can't fall in between. And number four, your musical live chat will just get you muted. No excuses, ain't trying to hear that. Number five, if you do manage to stay alive, you will never get by taking someone's supply. Number six, make sure you got some strong Wi-Fi. Booty connections are no good, I say bye-bye. Ha. Number seven, if you do give me a record, ain't no need to send me trash talk within a private message. Dudes be acting like they won the Super Bowl when it's only one game, my dude, keep it under control. And number eight, thou shalt respect casuals, keep it peace, first timers make mistakes, it's natural. I remember day one on Gears, I got cussed out and clowned, so I haven't played in years. Number nine, no racism or sexism, just cause they're different, there's no reason to mess with them. And lastly, rule number 10 is have fun, remember it's a game whether you lost or won. Follow these rules, you'll enjoy gaming online. Casual at midnight standing in the long line. Folks IRL knowing you by your call sign. We can hang out long like Jay Leno's jawline. You're one of the greats of all times. No scumbags cut back, getting beat like drum tracks. Hero of the team making epic comebacks. At least you'll enjoy your time and you should want that. Print these rules, stick them on your board with thumbtacks. Gotta go, more games to unwrap.
Your game on track. Get your game on track. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Get your game on track. Get your game on track. Super Nintendo, game on track. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Super Nintendo.